Well, you may have heard me talking on yesterday's News Talk Breakfast about the front page story on the Irish Examiner yesterday, which was about a number of families who have come together to demand parole changes for victims of crime. And this is something that we've covered a lot on News Talk Breakfast over the past couple of months. One of those featured in the article yesterday was Sinead O'Leary from Cork, who survived a really vicious and a really frightening attack back in 2002 that killed her best friend Nicola Sweeney. And Sinead joins me now on the line. Sinead, good morning.
Hi Susan, good morning.
Sinead, thanks for joining us this morning. Sinead, I remember this attack that I mentioned there back in 2002. I think we were probably around the same age, so I remember when the story was in the news. But for those who may be not familiar with it, you might remind us of what happened that night.
What happened that night, me and Nicola were violently attacked in our home by a motiveless killer who savagely murdered her and attempted to murder me. I was left for dead. As far as he was concerned, I was dead too.
And this was in Rochestown in Cork. It was Nicola's parents'
house.
Yeah,
in her own home. Yeah. Yeah, it was in her own home in Rochestown in Cork.
And you were 19 at the time?
Yes, correct.
So just young women getting ready to go out on a night out, probably not a care in the world. I mean, I can't imagine how frightening something like that must have been.
Of course. I mean, that's something that's, it's life changing. It's something that's very difficult to attempt to recover from in any way. And then when you make strides in order to do that, you feel let down then by the state because there's no protection for you ongoing or any support for you ongoing.
Let's talk about that. As I said there, it's something that we've covered a lot on the programme before. Other families, victims of crime that, you know, really feel let down by the state when it comes to parole and the fact that they feel they just don't have a voice in all of that. Peter Whelan has served 6 years of his life sentence for killing Nicola, and 11 of the 15-year sentence, the consecutive term that he got for attempting to murder you. He has been back in Cork for a number of day releases. Tell me about how you came to know about that.
The information came to me via the Sweeneys. I assume it was from a journalist. I'm not too sure. That information only came to me this summer. So it was highly shocking to hear that and highly traumatic. You know, I would have been under the impression always that the sentence handed down by Judge Carney would have been fulfilled. My understanding would be it's unconstitutional that Whelan would even have seen the parole board as of yet at this point in his sentence. But yet that has been happening and we haven't been informed about it. We've been told nothing. We've been kept in the dark. There's been absolutely no... I mean, they say the balance of rights and needs of victims are supposed to be taken care of in these parole acts. That hasn't happened here at all in this case, at all.
You mentioned there the fact that he has only served 6 years. What's your view in terms of minimum sentences, Sinead? Is that something that you would like to see be brought in? I know other families that I've spoken to, they would love to know that when somebody is given a life sentence or given a sentence, that it would be said at the very start that they would have to do a minimum certain amount of years. So that person could at least, you know, try their best to try and move on, even if it was only for that period before they would have to allow themselves maybe think about it again. Is that something you'd like to see?
Of course. I mean, at the moment as it stands, the new Parole Act hasn't come into action. So it's only 7 years, which is shocking to think that that's all someone's life is even worth to begin with, is 7 years. You know, that's unbelievable to me. And there needs to be stricter sanctions there. There needs to be longer sentencing for murderers. I mean, in this case, you're looking at a motiveless killer. You know what I mean? This is crazy that this, in this day and age, someone of that character would be able to play the system this way and get out again, you know.
Talk to me a little bit about exclusion zones. And again, you know, when somebody like Peter Whelan is due for release eventually, you know, and where he may decide to go and whether he decides to go to Cork or whether he decides to go somewhere else. What would you like to see brought in terms of exclusion zones or in terms of victims having a say, at least, on where a person should be allowed to live?
Well, I suppose I would have been very naive with regards to this process. I would have just assumed that given a crime of that nature, that there would be an exclusion zone already in place that you could appeal to to see that happen. I mean, you're looking at victims who've lost their loved ones, who've been highly traumatized, who are doing whatever they can to get through their daily lives and deal with their trauma. They never should have to be confronted with that murder ever again. I mean, I think that's a small ask, that where a crime has been committed, an exclusion zone should be in place there.
The idea of Peter Whelan, Sinead, being back in Cork, what does that make you feel? Like, can you kind of describe to me just in terms of how you feel about that? Like, is it fear you're feeling?
I mean, it's fear, but I also feel that I was disposable to the state. I was the state's witness. They've catered to his needs now for the last 17 years and not mine. I feel completely voiceless and that the state has no regard or respect for my trauma and my recovery at all here, you know.
And that you...
I'm striving to find a sense of peace and security again in my life after suffering such a horrendous crime, but yet there's nothing in place in order to help me achieve that at all. Once again, it's the murderer that is being looked after by the state and the victims and the community and the general public safety itself is secondary to that now, you know.
That whole feeling of, you know, the fact that you were a state witness and now you feel, in a way, I suppose, thrown to the side, or, you know, that everyone is has moved on from the process now except you. And as you say, you're trying to rebuild your life and get to a place where, you know, this has the minimal impact on you, I guess, as something like that is ever going to... It's obviously a life-changing event, so you're never going to just move past it. But you have to find your way of living. You were very young when it happened.
Yeah.
Who do you have to go to? As in, is there somebody that you can make your case to? Do you feel that your voice is listened to when you, other than doing an interview like this or speaking to the Irish Examiner, which you did yesterday, which I'm sure you don't want to have to do?
No, I mean, me and Nicola's family have been forced, we feel, to appeal to the general public. That's who we're looking to for help. I mean, there was a prime time investigation into why was this prisoner given special treatment and allowed to see the parole board and granted these temporary day releases in Cork without care to our feelings, how that would affect us. And still those questions haven't been answered. You know, this is going on months. These questions have not been answered. All that has come back against us is this new parole act that still isn't in place. You know, and we're told there will be support for victims. We will be able to submit statements to the parole board. That was also the case in the pre-existing act, but we weren't given those. That was never offered to us. That was never given to us, you know.
Could you have bumped into Peter Whelan?
Yes, 100%. Yes.
And how would you have felt if that had happened?
I couldn't even imagine. I couldn't even begin to try and imagine how that would have felt for me. I think I would have maybe even just left immediately, have to given up all of my life here in this country and left. That the impact of that would have been, again, life-changing, you know.
You talk about the Parole Act there, and we know we're coming into a really funny time in politics because we will have a general election. We've just been speaking about it there, and often when that happens, all order of business goes out the window and very little is done once election mode kicks off. How vital is it, I guess, that a movement is made on this now, like this month or next month, before a new government comes in and it might be kicked further down the can again?
It's extremely vital. It's extremely important. I mean, you're looking at people who have been highly traumatized and mentally highly traumatized by losing a loved one. Do you know, something needs to get into place at the moment to support these people and give them some peace and some reassurance from the government that their voices are being heard. Because at this stage, it's only the voices of the murderers that are being heard. They're still going ahead with their parole meetings. None of that is stopping because of this law not being pushed into place. Do you know, it only stops for us. We're here stuck in limbo again, waiting again. We're voiceless again and being unheard again, you know.
I know you don't want to speak for Nicola, but you're in contact with her family, and I can only assume that her family, you know, speak as one with you on all of this. It must be terribly difficult for them as well.
Yeah, of course, they're trying to recover. I mean, how would you ever recover from your daughter being murdered, you know? motivelessly? How do you even begin to try and recover from that? What is the state doing to help them with their lives now ongoing, so they feel safe and protected, and that their daughter's life is being respected and that justice is being upheld for her? Because at the moment it isn't.
So you, Sinead, would, you know, that feeling of, you'd mentioned for them, they feel unsafe, but I guess because you were there that night in Rochestown in the house as well, and the fact that you saw him, I can only imagine that for you, that feeling of possibly being unsafe again, or possibly finding yourself in a situation, or feeling that you may come face to face with Peter Whelan again, is much harder for you than it would be for Nicola's parents.
I mean, I think it's hard for everyone, but I mean, for both parties here with us, you know, what we've had to deal with for the last 17 years is a remorseless killer who has constantly appealed at any corner that he can, state funded, which is a huge indication of lack of accountability and responsibility for the crimes. It's frightening for us to feel, not even for our own safety, but our community's safety, that this person has been coming and going back in Cork, and could eventually end up back in Cork.
Mm. I know we were in contact last night, and you described how you've been on a journey for the past number of years, and life will never be the same again. Nicola was your best friend. You obviously had to witness all of that. You were really badly injured yourself. It's a life-changing event that happened to you. What is life like for you now, though, or how do you kind of manage to keep your head in a good place?
I mean, it takes a lot, do you know what I mean? There's a lot to process, you know, and I worked really hard the last few years in coming to a place of trying to feel safe again and feeling protected again. And then when this information all came up, that's completely been blown out of the water for me again with regards to the state. You know, I feel misled by the state at this point. I put my faith in the state and its justice system, and I was very naive to do so, is how I feel. And that I'm starting from scratch all over again in terms of my recovery in that sense, I feel.
So you, in a way, it's a bit like swimming against the tide. So I guess, you know, you'd put in all of that work to try and get yourself to that point. And then when you realised that these day releases had been happening, you didn't know about them. You weren't forewarned about them. And, you mm-hmm. know, there is a chance that he will be back in Cork. It just brings you mm-hmm. right back to square one.
Of course, it's there's no time to heal and move on now. Do you know what I mean? There's, how am I supposed to safely feel comfortable and safe living my life here? This is where I'm from. This is where my family is from. This is where Nicola's family is from, and her loved ones. Do you know, what rights do we have here? We should be allowed to have a life now, a peaceful life now, and that's not what we're getting at all.
There was some other families that joined forces with you, Sinead, in that article that I mentioned in the Examiner yesterday. Other families who feel the same. And as I say, it is something that we've covered on the programme lots. So I've come in contact with a lot of families who have similar experience and really don't want a person back in their locality. Do you feel you've got a greater voice if you come together as one, I guess?
Yes, 100%. Yes, of course, you know. Because, I mean, that's where, you know, it's power in numbers, you know. There's so many people out there who face this at the moment. Like, it's becoming a big problem here in Ireland. There is just no rights or support for victims.
Yeah.
And then, once again, they're forced to speak out on a public forum, which is very difficult when you're dealing with trauma.
And some can't do it. Like, you know, some can't do it. And they're so fearful that they would be afraid and they don't want to do it. And they shouldn't have to do it. They just shouldn't have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, why should I have to put my face on a primetime news investigation, making myself vulnerable again to a murderer who tried to kill me? As far as he was concerned, I was dead. Do you know what I mean? And the indications I've been given by what's been happening is that he is unremorseful, you know, it's madness. So I've had to put myself out there and expose myself and become vulnerable again to try and get some help from the state here with this, you know. And that's what they're asking of all of these people.
Yeah, they're all in the same boat. Sinead, listen, thanks so much for talking to us on News Talk Breakfast this morning. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and I really hope that
there is
some development as we get into 2020 early in this year, as we say, before an election happens. But Sinead O'Leary, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Lots of texts coming in about that interview with Sinead. Tom and Kerry's been in touch with an awful, awful story. We really need to look at our justice system and how it's skewed in favour of the criminal rather than the victim. We need a victim-centred approach and less of the bleeding heart liberal thinking. Another text from Sarah in Louth. Fair dues to you, Sinead. It takes a lot of bravery to stand up to such a horrible criminal and the justice system. We owe you and people like you a debt of gratitude. Jenny in Tala's been in touch. Same old story. Politicians talk and talk about changing the system, but in reality they keep kicking the can down the road and focusing on re-election. And to think that in this case their negligence is putting us all at risk by allowing people like this on our streets. And I'll just bring you one more for Sinead. It comes in from Pat in Waterford. I cannot imagine the horrible trauma that a victim of a crime like that must feel. I really hope that Sinead gets some solace at some stage and the justice system finally gives her the respect she deserves.